To everyone's surprise, a young couple decided to get married after just a few short dates. They were enamored with one another, and so they got married, and a few months in, they actually realized that they weren't in love with each other, but they were committed to this marriage. The wife found the husband very demanding, and you'll be surprised to know that this husband gave this wife task lists, do's and don'ts. There were things like, you need to get up at this time in the morning, you need to make this for me for breakfast, you need to have this for me for supper, supper needs to be on the table by this time, I want my laundry done by this day of the week. He had all these tasks. So each day, this wife, trying to be committed to her vows, trying to be faithful to the husband that she didn't love, she did the tasks out of mere obligation. A number of years after they had been married, the husband got sick and ended up passing away. And so this lady found herself a widow just for a couple years. Then she met a new man, and the two of them fell in love and ended up getting married. This new husband was so in love with this lady that he would do all kinds of things to please her. He would treat her well and say kind things to her and would buy her gifts all the time. And she found herself reciprocating the love. Her heart was pounding for her husband. One day she was in the kitchen and she ended up opening one of the drawers in the kitchen and she found a note that was from her first husband. It wasn't a love note, but a task note. It was one of the lists, one of the do's and don'ts lists, and she opened up and she began to reflect on what that list held, all the things that she was to do. Then it struck her that in this new marriage, no list had been given to her, but she continued to serve her new husband in the same way she served her first husband, but this time she did it because she loved him. She kept doing the task, but not out of obligation, out of genuine love. Friends, I want you to know that the first relationship was done purely out of obligation. But the second relationship was done out of love. I want you to understand that our only true intimacy will cause us to serve someone without a sense of obligation. Too often in our Christianity, we serve God out of obligation. How many times have you said this statement, I do this because the Bible says, or I know that my pastor said, or we know that we're supposed to do this, and we do certain things out of obligation. Sometimes we do it begrudgingly, and sometimes when we live our lives out of obligation, we find ourselves cooling in the things that we should be doing. The things that we should have a passionate heart for, we find ourselves pulling away from those things, maybe sliding back a little bit, or becoming very religious and just doing things out of obligation. But when we experience true love, we move from obligation to serving the other individual out of a different motive. And friends, I want to tell you that when it comes to our Christianity, God doesn't desire for you to serve him out of obligation. He wants you to serve him out of a passion for him. But that passion for him, that love for him, only comes about when we recognize God's love for us. When we recognize that God is not a distant God, but he's an intimate God, a God who draws close to us. So today I want to look at the intimate God. I want you to turn your Bibles or follow along on the screen with us as we look at Psalm 139. The Bible says, "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit down and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light becomes night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. For you create it. My inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you. When I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eye saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." This psalm is a psalm of David. And it's so interesting, we stopped at verse 16, but if you get to the very end of the psalm, David starts to talk about a disdain for those who are opposed to God, those who live evilly, in an evil way. He then says, God, would you search me to make sure that there's no wicked way in me? And he comes to this place where he is so desperate for God to be pleased with his life. It begs the question, why? Why is David so interested in making sure that God is pleased with him? Well, friends, I want to suggest to you that the psalm that we just read, it leads to that place. It leads to the place where David ends, that we will please God, we will desire to please God when we recognize that God is intimately in love with us, that there is an intimacy that God has for us. I want to show you the ways in which God is intimately involved in your life. The first is this: God knows you. David begins to say a number of statements to talk about how God knows him. He says, God, you've searched me. He says, you know when I sit and when I stand. You know my thoughts. You know where I go and when I sleep. You know my words, and you are familiar with all my ways. Verse 3. You see, God is not someone who observes our actions. He's not this distant God who steps back and just kind of watches the things we do day after day. But friends, he knows your dreams. He knows your disappointments. He knows your fears. He knows your failures. He knows the things that nobody else knows. It's easy to observe someone's outward actions, but God goes deeper. He gets more intimate. He goes closer because he wants to know you in a way that nobody else knows you. David says that God searches him. And this word search means to go exploring or seek out intimately. I have a friend who used to bug me all the time about soccer. He made fun of me because he knew I was a soccer fan. He told me that he thought soccer was the stupidest sport ever. I mean, that is blasphemy for me. He's a big baseball fan, and so for years he made fun of me. One day I got a text from him, and he said, I need to apologize to you. He said, I have fallen in love with soccer. Well, my ears perked up. I said, tell me what happened. He said, I woke up on Saturday morning and everybody in the house was asleep, and I thought I'd just watch TV, and there was nothing really on except for this soccer match. And he said, as I sat there, I thought, I'm just going to give it a chance. And he said, I began to watch, and it was an incredible match. That it was back and forth, back and forth. And he said, I found myself on the edge of my seat watching this match, and by the end, I was standing up cheering for one of the teams. He said, I was so overwhelmed by the emotions that I experienced in that moment that I thought to myself, I need to figure out what it is that Hillier is so interested in and what makes this sport so interesting. He got online and he began to search. He began to read every article he could find. He began to find out how the English Premier League worked. He began to figure out how the Champions League worked and all the tournaments and how the recruiting and the transfers all worked. He just kept on searching and searching and exposed himself to as much information as possible. He dove deeply into the subject of soccer. Let me tell you something. That's what God does for your life. He doesn't just look at it from a surface view. He digs. He goes. He gets as much information as possible. God is not just familiar with us, but he seeks to know us in a way unparalleled with any relationship we have. You see, there is nothing that we can hide from God. When we recognize that God knows us intimately, we can stop pretending and allow ourselves to be vulnerable with him. Friends, this idea of vulnerability usually comes about in the area of prayer. This place, when it comes to our Christian journey, it's prayer. We are sometimes fail to be vulnerable with God because what happens is we don't want to be anything less than what God might want. In fact, what happens is I have people come to me and they'll say, hey, I know I should pray. I know that's what's expected of me. I just don't know what to say. You see, we have this perception that we've got to put on a performance for God, that maybe we should put on some kind of mask. Have you ever been there with other people? You maybe are having a terrible day, and you decide that you're going to put on a mask just so that that everything's bright, and so you're feeling so terrible inside. You're feeling like the world's coming apart, but people see you, and you put on your mask, your happy mask, and they say, hey, how are you doing? You're like, I'm doing great. Everything's wonderful. And then they walk away and you take off your mask and you're like, man, this world stinks. And then you walk along and you see another person who's going to ask you how you're doing. And so you put the mask back on and you say what you think they want to hear. Hey, how's things going? Oh, things could never be better. Oh, everything in life is great. I am a blessed person. You put the mask on and they walk away and you take the mask off and you're like, man, life is difficult. And we go through life in our relationships trying to perform, putting on masks with people. And we sometimes come to God in prayer in the same manner. We think that we need to put on a mask. And so we go to God, and maybe we think that we need to be super intellectual and have all these big words. And so we put on our intellectual mask, and we're like, oh God, thou art the goodest. We won't say goodest. Thou art amazing. Thou art awesome. And we begin to quote scriptures, and we provide a very intellectual presentation in our prayers. Or maybe we want to do it just relationally, and we put on the mask and we like, God, I love you so much. I just have such a heart for you, and you're the best. And we use all this flowery language, or we have some other perception of God, and we begin to speak all this stuff, and finally God just says, hey, don't you know that I intimately know you? I know that the words that are coming out of your mouth are trying to impress me. You're trying to put on a performance. Take off the mask. I just want to hear you express what I know is already in your heart. In those moments, we can be very vulnerable and we can say, God, no mask, no mask. That's been a tough week. I'm tired. I've been working really hard. Or maybe you'd say, God, like this COVID situation has thrown my world upside down. I don't know what to do in this situation. Or maybe you're in a place where you've got a bad report and you're afraid. And you'd say, God, I know I'm supposed to be a person of faith, but I'm so afraid. What if this disease doesn't get healed? What if there's no cure? What if the procedures don't work? And you get vulnerable with God. And you know what happens is God goes, I'm so glad that you took off the mask. I'm so glad that you got vulnerable, because I know what's inside of you. I know the fears there. I know that the insecurities are there. I know the disappointments are there. I know everything about you. I want you to come to me without the mask, because I know you. God's intimate knowledge of us is an invitation to conversation that allows us to be real and safe at the same time. Those conversations are the farthest thing from being obligatory. God knows you. The second thing that I think that we see in this passage is that God is with you. David recognizes that he can't escape from God. He says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? And then he starts to consider some possibilities. Can I go up into the heavens and try to escape from you? No, you're there. Can I go into the depths? And this word is actually talking about Sheol or hell. He's like, if I go to the furthest place, if I go to hell, your presence is there. If I go where the rays of the sun's dawn are, I'll escape. No, you're there. If I go across a large body of water, can I escape you? No, you're there. And then in verse 10, he says this, no matter where I go, your hand guides and your hand holds me. Your hand guides and your hand holds me. You see, David says, there's nowhere I can go to escape God. He's always with me. He's not a God who's just occasionally in my life. He's a God who's always with me. But this is not just a geographical element. You see, he then goes on to talk about darkness. He talks about being in the place of darkness. And darkness is not a physical darkness, but it's a place of obscurity. It's a place of difficulty. It's a place of dread. It's in those places, in the dark places, friends, that I sometimes wonder if God's there. How about you? Those moments where God seems so obscure, he seems so far away, and I'm in the most difficult, dark places, and I ask, can I go into a place like that and still have God's presence with me? David says, yeah, no matter where I go, you're there. He says this, God is guiding and God is holding. God is guiding and God is holding. A number of years ago when I was youth director, I had a friend who was pastoring in a church nearby. This was his first church, and I thought it would be a great situation for him. But after he arrived at this church, he began to realize that there was some dysfunction in the leadership. And so each week he would call me, not just once, but was multiple times. And he would spend hours on the phone just kind of processing the decisions of the leadership and some of the things that were happening between him and the senior pastor. And he would start to vent, and he would ask me what he needed to do, and I would guide him. And there were times he's like, I'm going to do this. I'm like, no, you can't do that. And I would keep offering him guidance, And these were long conversations, multiple times every single week. Get to the end of the conversation, and my friend said to me, Jeff, thank you so much. He says, I need to apologize. I know I'm taking up a lot of your time. My response back was, you don't need to apologize. I am here for you every step of your journey at this church. You see, that's what God does for you. No matter how many times you go to him, no matter how many times you call him, no matter how many times you need his help, he is there guiding you along the way. He is so close to you. He is so intimate with you that no matter what you're going through, he is there to guide you. There have been years of my life where I've had to step into people's lives who are going through difficult situations. It especially happens when they've lost a loved one. And what I find is that there are times I show up at somebody's place who has lost a loved one, and I don't know what to say. Like there aren't enough words to bring comfort. There isn't the right cliche to be said. And in that moment, what I often will do is I will take the person, if it's appropriate, and I will simply pull them in. I'll wrap my arms around them, and I'll say, I'm so sorry. I won't give them any words. I will just hold them in my arms. And often in those moments, they will break down crying, and they will weep and weep and weep. And at the end of this embrace, they most often will wipe the tears from their face, and they'll look me in the face, and they'll say, thank you so much. And each time they say thank you, I'm perplexed, like, what did I do? I didn't say anything. I didn't fix the situation. And then I realize all they needed was for me to hold them, to bring them comfort. It's what was needed most. And David says that there are times God's guiding us, and there are times he's just holding us. He's just there holding things together in our lives. Listen, David recognized that God is constantly there. He's there in whatever way we need him for the situation that we're in. When we attempt to live for God, it is this knowledge that God is with us that helps us find the courage that's needed to do what we couldn't do in our own abilities. Friends, he will never let us walk alone. He is right beside us every step of the way. God is with you. So God knows you. God is with you. And the last thing is, God distinguishes you. God distinguishes you. A little weird phrase. But David observes this. He observes that God is attentive to the creation process. He says statements like this. You've knit me together. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. All my days have been ordained. And those days have been placed in a special book that you have for me. Jeff Hillier book in my life. You see, David recognizes that God is this craftsman, this God who intimately knows who we are, who intimately has designed us, who has put us together. You see, it's the comparison of assembly line versus craftsman, assembly line production. You were trying to produce a number of widgets, and they all look the same. And so the designer simply creates a mechanism and some machine, and he puts the machine into place and maybe puts some people in charge of the machine, and then steps away, and he lets widget after widget after widget get made that looks exactly the same. There's no personal touch on those widgets. The craftsman is so different. The craftsman takes each individual widget and adds his own design. Paints one blue, carves a little bit deeper in this one, adds a little bit of trim on this one. It adds a personal touch to make each widget differently. See, God didn't make you part of an assembly line production. God became the great craftsman, the one who got so close to his creation, and he made each of us unique. Not an assembly line, but unique. Too often we fail to appreciate the craftsmanship of God in our lives. We begin to compare ourselves to other people, wishing that we had what they had. We choose assembly line mentality. We say, I want to be like that person. Oh, that person can sing so well. I want to be just like them. I want to be the exact model of them. Oh, that person is so talented in this area. I want to be like them. Oh, this person is such a great communicator. I want to be like them. And friends, if we're really honest, if I'm honest, there are so many times where I just want to be a replica of somebody else because I covet their giftings and their talents. And when that takes place, I minimize the unique design that God has placed in Jeff Hillier. I minimize the intimacy that he put into this design. We need to pay attention to that. In the 11th century, King Henry III of Bavaria grew very tired of his monarchy. He was so tired of court life, and he was so tired of all the stresses of running the kingdom. So one day, he decided that he would make an application to Prior Richard to become a contemplative at the local monastery. Prior Richard was completely perplexed. Here is the king of Bavaria. How could this man leave his great throne, the place that God had made for him? And so he confronted the king and he asked this question. He said, "Your Majesty, do you understand that the pledge here is one of obedience?" King Henry immediately responded, "Oh, I do. The rest of my life, I will be obedient to you as Christ leads you." Then Prior Richard looked at him and said, "Then I will tell you what to do. Go back to your throne and serve faithfully in the place that God has placed you." When King Henry died, there was a plaque that was made and it said this: "The king learned to rule by being obedient." You see, this king had coveted a different lifestyle. He coveted Prior Richard's life. He saw something in him. He wanted that. He compared himself to that, and he desperately wanted that. But his true effectiveness came when he became obedient to the distinguished role that God had given to him specifically. Friends, listen, when we will only truly become effective in our lives when we start to live out of what God has designed specifically for us, not for anybody else. I'm not to live out any of our staff's lives. I am not to live out some other pastor's life. I am not to try to replicate somebody else. But the effectiveness of my life comes when I live out of a distinguished role, recognizing that God so intimately knew me, that he knit me together, that he fearfully made me, he wonderfully made me. And he said, "Jeff, this is the purpose. This is what I've ordained for you. You alone. You alone are to pastor CPC at this season. You alone are to be the father to these three kids. You alone are to be the husband to this lady. You alone are to be the friend of this person. You alone." And he spoke to me specifically about what I was designed for. When I recognize that, when I recognize that the effectiveness of my life comes when I realize that I'm an extension of God's craftsmanship in my life, then I realize I can't compare myself to other people. Friends, don't compare what's in your life to somebody else. God made you distinguished. And don't covet. Don't look at somebody else and say, "I want that. I want to be more like them. I want to look like them. I want to sound like them. I want to have their smarts. I want to have their sports abilities." Don't covet, because God designed that person for them, not for you. And don't show contempt for what God designed you to be. God, the creator of this earth, got so close to you, not like an assembly line supervisor, but as a craftsman. He got so close to you that he got close and he began to design you so specifically. Don't show contempt for the giftings in your life, for all he's placed inside of you. But what you need to do is you need to celebrate that God intimately designed you. He has a purpose and a plan that is only for you. Only for you. Celebrate God's distinguished design of you. There's a story about a mom and her little girl, and they are on a plane and they're going back home. They've been separated from the father for a few weeks as they've been traveling. And as they're on the plane, this little girl is crying. She's so afraid to be on this plane. And she's missing her dad. And so finally the mother tries to calm her down and gives her a glass of orange juice and some fruit. The little girl drinks the juice very quickly and eats the food. A few moments later, there is great turbulence on the plane, and the little girl all of a sudden goes pale and as you can imagine, she ends up getting sick and throwing up all over her dress. I mean, the mom tries to clean her up, but there is the stuff everywhere, all over her. She stinks. It's stuck to her. Her dress is wet. And shortly later, the plane lands. As mom and this messy little girl make their way into the airport, there is the little girl's dad. And the little girl runs to her dad, and the dad is wearing a white t-shirt. He looks down at his little girl, and he sees her dress, and he can identify immediately that she has been sick on the plane. He can smell it before she even gets close. And so as she's staying there with this vomit all over her dress, stinking and wet and repulsive to so many people, the dad bends down, wraps his arms around his daughter, picks her up, pulls her in, and says, "Daddy's girl." What amazes me is that this dad, this father, did what nobody else would do. Everybody else on the plane was trying to distance themselves from the girl. Everybody else made sure that there was a certain level of proximity that they didn't get to because of her sickness. But the father drew in incredibly close because he loved the little girl. It's a picture of God and his intimacy with you. God knows everything about you. He's with you every step of the way. He knows the things you do right and the things you do wrong. He knows the times you question his distinguished design for your life, and yet he pulls you in and loves you so intimately. God is an intimate God. And when we recognize that he is willing to get the closest to us, closer than anybody else is willing to go, we move from an obligation to serve him to serving him out of this great love because we've experienced his intimacy with us. Friends, he knows us, he is with us, he distinguishes us. He is the God who is intimately involved in our lives. God, I thank you so much that you draw close, that you know us intimately. You've searched us and you know not just the outside but the inside of us. I thank you that you're with us. There's nowhere we can go or we can escape from you. That even in the darkest, obscure moments, you're with us. And I thank you that you've distinguished us. You have designed us to be so unique, and you have placed a purpose in each one of us. I pray this week that we will reflect on your incredible love, that this love that brings the Father towards messy children and draws close to us and stays close to us and intimately knows us. And may we serve you not out of obligation, but with a great delight to serve a God that we want to just love on the way he loves us. So God, be with my friends today. Let them not serve you out of obligation, but let them serve you out of reciprocal love. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.